Today I'm going to practice reading a section from William Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury. We have a book release for my redesign that's coming out with the Magdalen House in a couple of days, and I thought I'd try reading it a few times out loud. See if I can not botch it. See how it goes. June 2nd, 1910. When the shadow of the sash appeared on the curtains, it was between 7 and 8 o'clock, and then I was in time again, hearing the watch. It was grandfather's, and when father gave it to me, he said, "Quentin, I give you the mausoleum of all hope and desire. It's rather excruciatingly apt that you will use it to gain the reducto absurdum of all human experience, which can fit your individual needs no better than it fit his or his father's. I give it to you not that you may remember time, but that you might forget it now and then for a moment, and not spend all your breath trying to conquer it. Because no battle is ever won," he said. "They are not even fought. The field only reveals to man his own folly and despair, and victory is an illusion of philosophers and fools." It was propped against the collar box, and I lay listening to it, hearing it, that is. I don't suppose anybody ever deliberately listens to a watch or a clock. You don't have to. You can be oblivious to the sound for a long while. Then, in a second of ticking, it can create in the mind, unbroken, the long diminishing parade of time you didn't hear. Like father said, down the long and lonely light rays, you might see Jesus walking, like, and the good Saint Francis that said, "Little sister death, that never had a sister." Through the wall, I heard Shreve's bed springs, and then his slippers on the floor hishing. I got up and went to the dresser and slid my hand along it and touched the watch and turned it face down and went back to bed. But the shadow of the sash was still there, and I had learned to tell almost to the minute, so I'd have to turn my back to it, feeling the eyes animals used to have in the back of their heads when it was on top, itching. "It's always the idle habits you acquire which you will regret. Father said that. That Christ was not crucified. He was worn away by a minute clicking of little wheels that had no sister." And so, as soon as I knew I couldn't see it, I began to wonder what time it was. Father said that constant speculation regarding the position of mechanical hands on an arbitrary dial, which is a symptom of mind function. "Excrement," father said, like sweating, and I saying, "All right, wonder, go on and wonder." It had been cloudy. I could have looked at the window, thinking what he said about idle habits, thinking it would be nice for them down at New London if the weather held up like this. Why shouldn't it? The month of brides, the voice that breathed. She ran right out of the mirror, out of the banked scent. Roses, roses. Mr. and Mrs. Jason Richmond Compson announced the marriage of roses, not virgins like dogwood, milkweed. I said, "I've committed incest, father," I said. "Roses, cunning and serene. If you attend Harvard one year but don't see the boat race, there should be a refund. Let Jason have it. Give Jason a year at Harvard." Shreve stood in the door, putting his collar on, his glasses glinting rosily as though he had washed them with his face. "You taking a cut this morning? Is it that late?" He looked at his watch. "Bell in 2 minutes." I didn't know it was that late. He was still looking at the watch, his mouth shaping. "I'll have to hustle. I can't stand another cut. The dean told me last week." He put the watch back into his pocket. Then I quit talking. "You better slip on your pants and run," he said. He went out. I got up and moved about, listening to him through the wall. He entered the sitting room toward the door. "Aren't you ready yet?" "Not yet. Run along. I'll make it." He went out. The door closed. His feet went down the corridor. Then I could hear the watch again. I quit moving around and went to the window and drew the curtains aside and watched them running for chapel. The same ones fighting, the same heaving coat sleeves, the same books and flapping collars flushing past like debris on a flood. And Spode, calling Shreve, my husband. "Ah, let him alone," Shreve said. "If he's got better sense than to chase after the little dirty sluts, whose business? In the South, you're ashamed of being a virgin. Boys, men, they lie about it, because it means less to women," Father said. He said it was men invented virginity, not women. Father said it's like death, only a state in which the others are left. And I said, "But to believe it doesn't matter." And he said, "That's what's so sad about anything. Not only virginity." And I said, "Why couldn't it have been me and not her who was unvirgin?" And he said, "That's why that's sad too. Nothing is even worth the changing of it." And Shreve said, "If he's got better sense than to chase after the little dirty sluts." And I said, "Did you ever have a sister? Did you? Did you?" Spode was in the middle of them, like a terrapin in a street full of scuttering dead leaves, his collar about his ears, moving at his customary unhurried walk. He was from South Carolina, a senior. It was his club's boast that he never ran for chapel and had never got there on time and had never been absent in 4 years and had never made either chapel or first lecture with a shirt on his back and socks on his feet. About 10 o'clock, he'd come in Thompson's, get 2 cups of coffee, sit down and take his socks out of his pocket and remove his shoes, put them on while the coffee cooled. About noon, you'd see him with a shirt and a collar on, like anybody else. The others passed him running, but he never increased his pace at all. After a while, the quad was empty. A sparrow slanted across the sunlight onto the window ledge and cocked his head at me. His eye was round and bright. First he'd watch me with one eye, then flick, it would be the other one, his throat pumping faster than any pulse. The hour began to strike. The sparrow quit swapping eyes and watched me steadily with the same one until chimes ceased, as if he were listening too. Then he flicked off the ledge and was gone. It was a while before the last stroke ceased vibrating. It stayed in the air, more felt than heard, for a long time, like all the bells that ever rang still ringing in the long dying light rays, and Jesus and Saint Francis talking about his sister, because if it were just to hell, if that were all of it, finished, if things just finished themselves, nobody else there but her and me, if we could just have done something so dreadful that they would have fled hell except us. "I've committed incest," I said. "Father, it was I. It was not Dalton Ames." And when he put Dalton Ames, Dalton Ames, Dalton Ames, when he put the pistol in my hand, I didn't. That's why I didn't. He would be there, and she would, and I would. Dalton Ames, Dalton Ames, Dalton Ames. If we could have just done something so dreadful. And Father said, "That's sad too. People cannot do anything that dreadful. They cannot do anything very dreadful at all. They cannot even remember tomorrow what seemed dreadful today." And I said, "You can shirk all things." And he said, "Ah, can you?" Now we'll look down and see my murmuring bones and the deep water like wind, like a roof of wind, and after a long time they cannot distinguish even bones upon the lonely and inviolate sand. Until on the day when he says rise, only the flat iron would come floating up. It's not when you realize that nothing can help you, religion, pride, anything. It's when you realize that you don't need any aid. Dalt names, Dalt names, Dalt names. If I could have been his mother, lying with open body lifted, laughing, holding his father with my hand refraining, seeing, watching him die before he lived. 1 minute, she was standing in the door. I went to the dresser and took up the watch with the face still down. I tapped the crystal on the corner of the dresser and caught the fragments of glass in my hand and put them in the ashtray and twisted the hands off and put them in the tray. The watch ticked on. I turned the face up, the blank dial with little wheels clicking, clicking behind it, not knowing any better. Jesus walking on Galilee and Washington not telling lies. Father brought back a watch charm from the St. Louis Fair to Jason, a tiny opera glass into which you squinted with one eye and saw a skyscraper, a Ferris wheel, all spidery. Niagara Falls on a pinhead. There was a red smear on the dial. When I saw it, my thumb began to smart. I put the watch down and went into Shreve's room and got the iodine and painted the cut. I cleaned the rest.